being, he didn't go as high as everybody thought was, I think, because of his early film at Kansas State. He was a little inconsistent at times, and I feel like everybody, you know, that saw him this year, Ohio State, Will Howard, I don't think that was a big enough body of work to go ahead and select him in like the third or fourth round, whereas Pittsburgh had those earlier picks, right? But I think they're very comfortable with where they are. I think they probably know, they've already had enough communication with Aaron to feel like, hey, this is where we stand in the quarterback room. And I honestly feel like you can wait for a guy like Aaron Rodgers, right? If he wants to withhold signing and being at home right now, and if he wants to just take his time, I think you do your due diligence. The guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no really age limit for gunslingers in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers can still sling the rock at a high level. He can read defenses like a children's book. Yep. And I think you do your due diligence and respect by waiting out for a guy like that. And hey, if it isn't, you can roll with Mason Rudolph. You can roll with Will Howard. And there's a really good chance you probably end up trading for a veteran quarterback. I won't say no names. He probably plays for the Falcons. but you have a lot of options there. And Pittsburgh's a really good place where they know how to make cap space work. They know how to dress up things for the strength of the organization. If we need a quarterback, they're going to find one. If we need a running back, they're going to get one. You know, that's a really good place to be, especially for a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Especially if you want to go out with a bang, I think they're in a really good window right now to win. So we'll see. I'm interested to see how that plays out for them.
Yep, for sure. Well, we'll be interested to see where you land this offseason. And whenever you're done with that NFL career, we know that media career is going to get going. But I appreciate you joining, man. It was great stuff as always. We'll catch up soon.
Appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Yes, sir. He is Braden Fajoco, NFL defensive tackle free agent right now. But we'll see where he lands at Braden Fajoco on X. Interesting take there from a guy who played for the Steelers on the Steelers quarterback room. Not near as he doesn't think it's near, and you know, obviously, you dress it up to a certain extent. You don't want to talk bad about anybody, but he certainly thinks it's better than what the view is on the outside looking in. Mason Rudolph has played some decent games, won some games with them. I guess there is some comfortability if they go into the year with him as the starter, especially with the weapons he now has on the outside to potentially throw a deep ball to. And he did that at a high level at Oklahoma State. That was just eons ago, it feels like.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear his perspective because he's been there. I also wonder if he's weighing what the distraction of Aaron Rodgers would be
right.
In the Steelers locker room as well.
Right. And then he threw in a little, hey, Falcons organization going with Michael Penix. There's a veteran quarterback who may still want to get out of there, and he may want a starting job. His name, I'll say his name, it's Kirk Cousins. So he threw that out there. But I found that interesting. Appreciate Braden for carving out a little bit of time with us today on the show. Now let's go ahead and get with DeMichael Cole. We had Grizzlies exit interviews. We had a series where the Grizzlies got swept. What do they need to do to improve their chances in the Western Conference heading into next year? DeMichael has those answers on the other side. So a little bit of live radio just happened to us. We're going to go ahead and move back to DeMichael Cole to about 5:25, 5:30 here, the bottom half of the hour. But that gives us some time to talk some NFL draft. And obviously at the top of the NFL draft conversation right now is Shedeur Sanders falling to the fifth round, even though most, if not all, mock drafts had him as a first-round selection. Mel Kiper Jr. was very perturbed by it. He went off on the National Football League live on ESPN during day three. I found it pretty interesting that he wanted to go after the NFL, and basically the gist of his conversation and the gist of his rant was about how the NFL has no idea about quarterback talent. They've screwed this up as long as we've played football, especially since the 2000s began. They never have a good feel for quarterback prospects coming out of college. And while I agree with him, I think the messenger needs to be told, hey, you don't know it either. Because Mel Kiper, over the years, let's think about the quarterback prospects that he has absolutely adored. Brady Quinn, Jimmy Clausen. He said if Jimmy Clausen doesn't turn out to be a good pro, then he's done being an NFL draft analyst. He'll no longer go on ESPN. Well, if you know anything about Jimmy Clausen's career, he went 1-13 as a starter. He's out of the league. He was out of the league after his first contract. So Mel Kiper Jr. has not stopped doing NFL draft analysis. So last time I checked, he was on there this weekend. So I don't think anybody has a good feel for these quarterbacks coming out of college. Now, I will say, before we left on Friday, I was amazed Shedeur Sanders was not a first-round pick. I thought that he could be a pick between 20 and 40. I said that many times. I thought that's where his evaluation stood in the grand scheme of things. Very talented quarterback, very highly productive, really good at placing the ball, a full field reader. He seems like a guy who could come into the NFL and potentially make an impact from day one. He didn't seem like a guy who has to sit behind a bunch of quarterbacks, learn from vets, do all of that. But as day two passed, him not getting picked, day three passed, he didn't get picked. I started to realize that as much as I tried to downplay the entitlement and the arrogance and those types of conversations, it seems very clear to me, Connor, that that was a tremendous part of the reason he fell in this draft. Sure, were there teams that didn't have him as a day one or day two pick on their board? Yes, that much is clear. But I think it's very clear that in this particular situation, the perceived arrogance, the perceived view of him bombing his interviews definitely came back to bite him in a big way. Now, there were some misnomers that we really have to sort of put to bed before we really get into the whole Shedeur Sanders conversation. One, Connor, you've noticed this. I've noticed this. The general public out there, it's a very polarizing topic, I understand, but the people that are on the hateful side of the Shedeur Sanders conversation are way, way too entrenched in that side. They act like this is the first time ever we've had a draft prospect who is arrogant. They act like it's the first time they've had a draft prospect that's overconfident. And here's the worst part. They act like this is the first time there's been a helicopter parent making decisions on behalf of their son. Do you remember the Longs, right? Howie Long, Chris Long. Do you remember the Matthews, Clay Matthews and his dad? Do you remember the Mannings? That's probably the most apt comparison to this particular conversation. Now, I understand there were differences in the way the Mannings and the Sanders handled this thing. Before the draft, on several different podcasts and otherwise, Deion Sanders said, I'm going to force my hand. I'm going to force a hand to see where Shedeur goes and Travis goes. And there's certain organizations I don't want him to play for. He's bad-talked the Browns in their quarterback position in the past on Twitter. You know, like he's been more loud about where he wants his son to go and where he is going to end up. And that certainly is something that people keep pulling on. But I want to make clear, this is not the first time this has happened. Archie Manning, Eli Manning, Peyton Manning. Let's go to the Eli Manning draft night. He's picked first overall to the LA Chargers or the San Diego Chargers at that time. He looks angry, picks up the jersey, does all that. As soon as he gets to offstage to his dad, to the interview room, his dad, Archie, says he's not going to the Chargers. I will not allow him to play for the Chargers. Now, he did that after the draft, after the pick was made, as opposed to Deion Sanders before the draft. But the idea that Shedeur and Deion Sanders' relationship and Deion talking about wanting to get him into certain organizations and deferring and not wanting to be a part of other organizations. The fact that people think this is the first time that's happened, you're completely misinformed and you're missing the point altogether. Again, I think really what you want to say is they were louder, more obnoxious about it. But this has happened before with premier quarterback prospects in the past, most notably Eli Manning. And I need people to understand that before we even get into this conversation.
Now, all that being said, what do you think of the fit with Sanders and Cleveland?
I don't know. I have no earthly idea. How am I supposed to feel about the fit? You have a quarterback room with a $230 million man with all this guaranteed money left for 3 years more on his deal in Deshaun Watson. You have an old man in Joe Flacco who seemingly a young quarterback can learn from. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been around the block. You have Kenny Pickett, who was drafted 22nd overall in a couple drafts ago, the 2021 NFL draft, by the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's bounced around the league with the Eagles. Now he's with the Browns. Then you have a guy who was picked before Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel, and then Shedeur Sanders himself. That was third and fifth round. I don't really understand the quarterbacks that went ahead of Shedeur Sanders based on talent. Dylan Gabriel, Tyler Shuck, all those guys. It's kind of ridiculous.
Why would the Browns draft Dylan Gabriel and then draft Shedeur Sanders?
As far as fit is concerned, like, I look at that room, and I look at where the Cleveland Browns are at, and two thoughts come to mind. One, he could potentially, with five quarterbacks in that room, be cut before we know it. Just because you have five quarterbacks in the room, you're not carrying five quarterbacks. One of those guys inevitably, or two of those guys inevitably, are either going to get cut or put on a practice squad. And Shedeur Sanders may be one of those guys. But my next thought after that is, Shedeur Sanders, from a talent perspective, I wouldn't preclude him from starting games this year just because of the talent I know him to be, and that quarterback room being what it is right now. Deshaun Watson coming off Achilles, Joe Flacco in the final years of his career, Kenny Pickett's never been a good starter, Dylan Gabriel, rookie, he's a rookie. And I think he is a better quarterback for the NFL than Dylan Gabriel at this particular moment. So like those two thoughts somehow enter my mind at the exact same time. And I'm not sure how you feel about the fit. I don't like any quarterback going to the Cleveland Browns. Kevin Stefanski's offense, as we've seen with Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson and a bunch of guys, it's hard to really grasp as a young player, as a guy trying to make your mark. But at the same time, you know, they are a quarterback-needy team, and he's a quarterback that was highly thought of heading into this draft season.
I think it's about the worst place he could have gone just because of the Cleveland Browns situation. It's not as much – like, I like Shedeur Sanders. I think he's got talent. I think he has a chance to be successful in the NFL. I don't understand why you would take Dylan Gabriel and then turn around and take Shedeur Sanders. It's just another
one of
those –
Did you see the draft room, though?
What the hell are the Browns doing type of deal?
Can we be honest? I think that was the Haslam's pulling strings behind the scenes. Once you get to the fifth round, there's a certain amount of value that comes with a guy like Shedeur Sanders, who was a projected first-round pick. I bet the Haslam stepped in. They're like, we're going to stop this fall now. Take him.
Now, it has been reported today that the Browns decided to not pick up Kenny Pickett's 2026 option. So I wonder if that was a signal to who may be left out of the quarterback room.
Eventually.
I don't understand why you would carry two rookie quarterbacks. And I think Dylan Gabriel was a good quarterback, but I think that Shedeur Sanders has more potential than Dylan Gabriel. Like, I feel like Dylan Gabriel is kind of who he is already. So that's why, like, it was just a bit dumbfounding to see them take two quarterbacks. The conversation around it, though, I think has been wild. Because, like you said, there have been flashy players before that we have seen. But for some reason, it's just been some great sin for Shedeur Sanders to be this flashy type of player. And they keep trying to take things out of context with him. And I like that you brought up the Mannings. And, yes, they operated in two different ways. But at the end of the day, it was very similar in that, you know, Archie was like, he is not going to play for these teams. And, you know, Deion said something very similar. I'm rooting for Shedeur Sanders. Unfortunately, I just think the Browns is a terrible place for him to be because they're the Cleveland Browns.
And if the Browns didn't take him, I don't know when his fall would have stopped, quite frankly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, there was a point on day one and day two where it's like, okay, if they take him here, still has a chance to be a starter, and the distraction conversation isn't there. But once you get to day three, if you're taking a quarterback at that time, What are you aiming for? Okay, this is a backup who hopefully we can develop over a couple of years. We're not thinking of starting this guy. But once you get to day three, what sucked for Shedeur even more is you were in that territory with most organizations where the conversation arises of, we don't want the backup to be a distraction, right? Cam Newton never got a second another job because of that. Because once your starter stinks and you have struggles, you don't want to have somebody putting all this pressure on him from behind, a big name, Cam Newton, Shedeur Sanders, another guy like that. Like, you didn't want a whole bunch of distractions. So once he fell in the draft, got picked by the Browns, if he wouldn't have got picked by the Browns, I wonder when the fall would have actually stopped. Would he have been in the sixth round, seventh round? Would he have gone undrafted? Like, that crossed my mind. As insane as that sounds, it crossed my mind that we were going to look at Shedeur Sanders being undrafted.
Which team was the biggest one that surprised you passing on
the
him?
Steelers?
Was it the Steelers?
It's the Steelers by far.
Every time they came around, I was like, okay, it's going to be the Steelers this time. Nope. Every single time I thought they were going to take him.
And obviously, we just had Brian Fajoco on. Love his perspective. Team he's been a part of. He's been on the inside of that whole thing and sees how their quarterback room has operated, which has not been great lately from the outside looking in. From the inside looking out, maybe a little bit different. But I'm amazed that the Steelers didn't take him for two reasons. One, Mike Tomlin couldn't have said anything better about the guy in the pre-draft process. And I know that he's not going to bad talk a player, but he said the toughness is overlooked, the grittiness, the type of teammate he is, it's overlooked. He said all of the things that were almost opposite of the view, the anonymous sourced views of Shedeur Sanders. So I thought, okay, this is a team who actually thinks highly of Shedeur Sanders and the type of teammate he is, and that overconfidence, arrogance thing is sort of thrown out the window with them. But then I think the more important part of this, the second part, they don't have a quarterback right now that gives the fan base a whole lot of hope. If you talk to Steelers fans before this draft, I think they all sort of thought, hey, Shedeur Sanders or Jackson Dart, I want one of those guys.
Right.
That was the conversation being had on a consistent basis. And now, since you didn't take him, you have Mason Rudolph, Will Howard, who you drafted late. You just look at their quarterback room, there's no excitement, and quite frankly, and maybe Will Howard can turn into something. He's 6'5", got a good arm, decent. He's a really good quarterback, national championship winning quarterback. He's a winner, all the good things. He can run, all the good things you can say about him. But you don't have excitement. On top of not having a real option, you don't have excitement in that room. And I thought Shedeur Sanders could have brought that. And I just, unless they bring in Aaron Rodgers this offseason, I think you're going to see more of the same on the offensive side of the ball. They can be a 9-8 team, but it's all going to be defensive-oriented, and that fan base is going to be frustrated the same way they are right now about the quarterback position in the offense, as they will be at the end of the season if they continue to do these things and keep this quarterback room.
It seemed like the Steelers had a priority of defense, and then they wanted to make sure they found a running back. And I like Caleb Johnson. I thought that was a pretty good pick in the third round. Do you think, if Shedeur had dropped to the sixth round, ninth pick, they would have taken him there instead of Will Howard?
Potentially, yeah.
Like it would have made sense for it to be Sanders.
Maybe. The world may never know. We'll never figure that out.
Because they went defensive tackle, running back, edge, defensive tackle. Like, they clearly wanted to go into the draft and said, we need help on defense, so we're going to grab some defenders or some young guys.
Does that make sense, though, considering them as an organization?
No, that's why it's a bit confusing, but that was clearly their viewpoint was, we've got to make sure that our defensive line is better. I don't know.
They have an aging guy in Cam Hayward who's going to move away from the game soon. They need to find a D-tackle to replace him. I get all that, but you've been doing the same things on offense for going on a decade, whether it's Big Ben or no Big Ben, and it's never gotten better. So I just don't understand not taking a swing. And maybe, and this is something I did that did cross my mind, and I know a lot of people had this cross their mind. Do you think that they're so perturbed, frustrated with the way that Kenny Pickett turned out that they're kind of risk-averse when it comes to taking a high quarterback in the draft, like a highly thought of quarterback in the draft, highly touted quarterback?
Did any of us really think that Kenny Pickett was going to be some magical answer for them, though?
I thought he could be passable. Obviously, he wasn't. I don't know if they have the right development or the right staff.
Does Will Howard feel any different than Kenny Pickett?
No, not particularly.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, it was confusing to me that they weren't involved in the Shedeur sweepstakes like we expected them to be.
Right.
So it is what it is.
Do you have a favorite pick of the draft?
I have two. I was going to give you my winners.
Look at that.
My two favorite draft classes that were put together. And these are teams that are trying to get to a passable playoff contending window. Not necessarily Super Bowl contenders, but teams that are moving in the right direction and could be middle of the pack, potential wild card teams going into next year. I'm going to start with the Patriots. Hell of a draft. You get Will Campbell, an answer at left tackle to start at number four overall. But then this is what they did for the rest of their draft. You bring in Travion Henderson, who is, outside of Ashton Jeanty, my favorite running back prospect because he can pass protect, he can catch the ball in the backfield, he can run, he can do all those good things, he's experienced. He doesn't have a whole bunch of hits on his body because Quinshon Judkins split some carries with him at Ohio State, so I think he's still got a lot to give. They brought in Kyle Williams, who's a really, really good inside-outside moving wide receiver, good route runner. I don't think he's, by any stretch of the imagination, ever going to turn into a, Jamar Chase 1,500-yard receiver, but he's a guy who I think can develop alongside Drake May, their starting quarterback, and make something happen. Really like that pick. Then they got Jared Wilson, center out of Georgia in the third round. He was one of my favorite centers in this entire draft. And he comes out of Georgia. There's a good track record of offensive linemen coming from Georgia, so I like that. But then they had Josh Farmer, D-tackle from Florida State, They brought in a kicker, by the way, Andres Borregales from Miami to replace their kicker position because Nick Folk was there forever, and he's like 800 years old. And then, I don't know if you saw it, but you see who Mr. Irrelevant was in the draft?
I certainly did.
Did that kind of blow you away? Of all the guys that I expected from the University of Memphis to get drafted, Kobe Miner was the only draft pick from the University of Memphis, and he was Mr. Irrelevant, pick 257, DB out of Memphis, of course, the transfer from Indiana. I thought he had a good year last year, but did you expect that?
I did not.
Chandler Martin, Seth Hennigan, and they landed in their particular spots. Rock Taylor, expected those guys. The only pick from the University of Memphis, Kobe Miner.
Craziest tweet of the weekend.
Kobe Miner.
Craziest tweet of the weekend.
Explain the tweet.
Have you not seen it? Did you see it?
I think I saw it.
The Patriots tweeted out Mr. Irrelevant.
But they deleted it.
And it just said A Miner.
And they ended up deleting it, right?
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
All right. Now cut the music. Because I have one more winner for you. And I'm going to go with the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona Cardinals did a good job. They got one of my favorite picks in the draft, Walter Nolan, out of Ole Miss. I think he's a guy who could immediately be a game wrecker on the inside. Obviously, he needs a little bit of development. Needs to be better in the run game, but I like that. They got a first-round talent, a guy who was supposed to be, you know, not too long ago, a top-10 pick.
Will Johnson,
cornerback out of Michigan.
Very good.
Got him at 47. Now, I know he's had some injury concerns leading up to the draft, but that is a damn good value pick in the second round. Then they got Denzel Burke, another DB from the Big Ten, from Ohio State, fifth round. Thought they got a good value out of that. But I thought they found value in every single round. Now, value at the draft versus value when they actually hit the field is completely different. But I thought they filled some positions of need and got value in every single pick. So we'll see how that all turns out. But I don't do losers, by the way. I don't really do losers in the draft.
You don't do losers?
I don't really do losers because I don't know how that's actually going to turn out. Because remember, what was it? It would have been 2022. The Lions, at the top of the draft, you have running back Jahmyr Gibbs, off-ball linebacker Jack Campbell, Brian Branch free safety at the top of the second round. And everybody had that, you know, left them for dead. Like, oh, they finally are contending and they take these non-value picks, non-traditional picks this high in the draft. Well, all those guys are on the verge of Pro Bowls and All-Pro selections. So it's hard for me to sit here and give a whole bunch of losers. It's about draft evaluation and what those guys are talking about behind the scenes. But I do give out winners. I think winners are deserving.
Just randomly, one of my favorite picks of the whole draft was Luther Burden to the Bears. I thought that was great.
I agree. I agree with you. I think he's going to be a really damn good player. Do they have more needs besides getting another wide receiver?
They definitely do. But
I think when you're talking about a guy you get at the top of the second round and you find value in it, it's like, if he's still on the board, I have to take him.
Right.
Like, that was their idea, and I completely get it. And now they have options. Like, when Keenan Allen's gone and DJ Moore's gone and, you know, they have to figure out that wide receiver room. You have Luther Burden in the
wings. Well, they now have
waiting in the wings, and he could be. I don't know if he'll pop this year because there's so many other guys that can catch balls for them. But I think by year two, he's a guy who could definitely pop.
Well, I think it's important that they now have two wide receivers that match Caleb Williams' timeline.
Yes, yes, Rome Odunze and him.
Right.
So very interesting. Now let's go ahead and talk some Grizzlies exit interviews and otherwise. How do the Grizzlies get better going into this offseason? Let's bring on DeMichael Cole from Commercial Appeal. DeMichael Cole is the Grizzlies beat reporter for the Commercial Appeal. He's on X at DeMichael C, and we have a lot to get to. It's the Grizzlies postmortem show, I should say. They got swept by the Oklahoma City Thunder over the weekend. Thunder put the finishing touches on them. But DeMichael, what's happening, man? How are you?
What's going on, Gabe? How we doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Now, you were at exit interviews over the weekend, and I just I hate to put you on the spot like this. Like, what is the main takeaway that you have after hearing Zach Kleiman, Jaren, Ja, the whole team, everybody? What is your main takeaway from what we saw in exit interviews, or at least the tone and tenor heading into this offseason?
Man, I'm cool with being put on the spot. It's a relevant conversation. It's a conversation that needs to be had. But the main takeaway for me is, you know, I've been covering this team for four seasons now. 21-22 season was my first season. And this is the first time from the players and Kleiman said it multiple times, but the players, you know, Desmond Bane, a couple other guys said it as well. This is the first time they basically admitted we're not close to winning a championship right now. And what I got out of that, in particular for Zach Kleiman, because this is a big admittance for him. Because, like I said, 2021, 2022, that season, the 56-win season, it was like, oh, we're on the up and up. Like, we're getting close. And then the next season comes, you know, Steven Adams gets hurt, Brandon Clarke gets hurt, and it's like, oh, if these guys didn't get hurt, you know, maybe we would put ourselves in this position. You win 51 games that season. Like, you're still feeling good. And then, of course, the next season, all the injuries happen. You set a record, you know, with injuries, and everyone dismisses that year. And earlier in this season, you're number two seed. People were still feeling good until they weren't. So, this is the first time that you've just heard them straight up say, like, we're not a championship contender right now. So the big takeaway from that is, what are you going to do about it? Because Zach Kleiman has said that they want to be a championship contender. Of course you want to be a championship contender because you have your core in place and you're paying them a lot of money. Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., you're building around those guys. So now you set yourself up where you're in a position where you have to do something this offseason. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to go get a Marcus Smart and, all right, we're ready to go. Right. We replace Dylan Brooks. It's not that simple anymore. You got to be aggressive. You got to go get some dogs. Even if you don't do anything with the core three, you have to make some notable moves around them that looks different. You can't go into next season and look at this. The Grizzlies are one of the two, three youngest teams in the league again. No, they got to go find their Chris Dunn, right? Like the Clippers, you know, did sure. With Chris Dunn. You got to go find your Malik Beasley, like the Detroit Pistons did this season. They got to go find those type of guys who play playoff basketball, who have certain skill sets where you know they can translate to winnable basketball, and you got to go win. Because you just said, we're not close to competing for a championship, but you want to be close. So now you're saying, If you go into this offseason and a lot isn't done, then there's going to be even, you know, there's going to be more pressing conversations to be had.
Absolutely.
That was my big takeaway.
So with being aggressive this offseason, I don't know how aggressive they can be in free agency. I think you would second that. You look at like a mid-level exception, I think it's like $9 million.
Yeah.
Especially if Jaren Jackson Jr., if you get pen to paper on that contract this offseason. So it feels like being aggressive and getting those pieces you're talking about has to be done through the trade market. Now, I don't know what those names would be. I don't know how they go about making that happen. But it does not feel like there's a whole bunch of flexibility in regards to taking in outside free agents. Is that the fair sentiment heading into this offseason with Zach Kleiman and company?
Yeah, they don't have a lot of flexibility. Right, when you think of it, but guess what? No one in the NBA does, pretty much. Like, unless you're a terrible team, cap space is dried up. So you have to win on the margins. The mid-level exception now, and the Grizzlies currently have a non-taxpayer mid-level exception, which is the most expensive mid-level exception. The mid-level exception is where you go get really good players. In today's league, unless you're getting guys like not the max level players, but this is where you get the really good role players. Will the Grizzlies use it? That's going to be the question. I think you're in a window now where it's a very relevant point that you have to use that. That'll get you one player right there. Again, like I said, you got to hit a couple guys on the margins. You know, it's tough. But it's the business, right? You got to go get you a Chris Dunn.
Yep.
You know, that's what the Clippers did. Now he's one of the most pivotal pieces, and they're paying him pennies. Malik Beasley isn't making a bunch of money in Detroit, but he was just second in the sixth man of the year running. You got to go find players that, hey, they have these specific skill sets. Sure, they're not going to come here average 20 points for you, but they can change games. Chris Dunn is winning games for the Clippers right now. Malik Beasley is winning games for the Detroit Pistons. You got to go find those type of guys on those minimum contracts. So it's possible. It's very possible to kind of upgrade this roster without making those necessary trades. But, yeah, when you get into the conversations with the trades, you always got to look at the salaries and what you have left. And there isn't a lot of, you know, quote-unquote flexibility, you know, with those salaries. You know, outside of your rookie contracts and things like that, you got a John Conchar, you got a Brandon Clarke. And then when you factor in moving a guy like one of those type of guys, you gotta weigh what team is gonna want to take on those contracts. Like, it's no secret John Conchar has been involved in trade talks.
Right.
To my knowledge, at least the last two seasons. I know for sure the last two seasons he's been involved in trade talks. Brandon Clarke is a bit of a different situation. He's coming off of another big-time injury. So then when you take those guys out of the equation, now you're getting into the conversation about the big three, which is a whole different conversation. So I think the easiest way, the most plausible way, is to, hey, we got a mid-level exception. That can net us a really good player. We can go out and get a winning player who's a starting caliber player with the mid-level exception. And then we just got to go find some really good specialists. Perimeter defense is a weakness right now. Go find you one of those cheap perimeter defenders who's going to come in and change your game with this impact. Go find you a versatile defender in the front court who's going to be physical, who's going to come in. But when Zach Edey, because when Zach Edey is out of the game right now, they're a bad rebounded team. Go find you another big who, when Zach Edey's in foul trouble or when he's out of the game, you say, no sweat. We got another guy who's going to come in and be very impactful on that front. It's those things that they can do in getting this roster older, getting this roster more experienced, that can really help give you a better idea of if this core three can get you a championship.
And final thing here, and I think pretty important on top of just like acquisitions, trying to find a better way forward with this roster, they're going to have to find a head coach, right? And I know Tomas Asalo, this was his runway, and he had 15 games, got swept by the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't know if anybody expected all that much better, but I think he only had like two or three practices between those 15 games, so he didn't have a lot of time to implement things. I don't think he did very well, though, by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't know if we can fully put that on his shoulders and blame him for that. What do you think's going to happen this offseason in regards to coaching? Because I saw exit interviews, and it felt like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it felt like John Morant, very positive on Tomas. Positive. Most everybody on the team, relatively positive. Zach Kleiman, relatively positive on Tomas. What do you think it looks like this offseason when we're talking about the next head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies?
Well, you know, that's I like what you said, but here's the thing. Did you expect them to say, nah, I don't like him. Hopefully we get
of
someone else.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point as well.
So, you know, like, it's less about Isolo in this situation and more about what the Grizzlies need to get to that next level. The urgency is there. Zach Kleiman said, we're not close. We got to be better. So the question comes at this point is, do you want to go for the risky hire? Do you want to go for, you know, the young, more unproven coaches who could be a good bang for the buck or whatever? That's where the Isolos come into play. That's where the Sam Cassells. That's where, you know, some of the top assistants in the league or the prominent college coaches, that's where they come into the conversation. Or do you want to say, you know what, we got to go with what we know. We got to go get some coaches that have coached playoff basketball.
Sure.
We got to go get some coaches where we know, oh, they've had, you know, personnel similar to ours before, and here's what they did with it. I'm of the opinion of the latter, of that. I think you got to go get a proven head coach, and there are going to be plenty out here. Go get someone who's proven. I've coached in the playoffs. I've probably led a team to a championship or an NBA Finals or a playoff run or whatever the case may be, because the urgency is here. You know, you don't really have time to mess up this hire and say, oops, okay, maybe we can go back to the well next offseason. Well, guess what? Next offseason, if everything goes as planned, this offseason you're going to sign Jaren Jackson Jr. to a big deal. Next offseason, that deal kicks in. So now you're in the apron. Now you're paying Desmond Bain, John Morant, and Jaren Jackson Jr. A big portion of your salary cap. So the urgency will be at an all-time high at that point. But right now, we're right on the cusp of that being the case.
With those vet head coaches, experienced head coaches, do you have a name or names that sort of stick out to you in that realm?
I think Mike Brown. Mike Brown has won at a lot of different places. He's been an assistant. You know, he won in Sacramento and took them to new heights. He won in Cleveland, right, with LeBron James. He's been in the playoffs. He's been tested. He has a big voice. He's very well respected around the league. He comes to mind for me. And that's one that really stands out.
Yep.
Of course, you got Mike Malone as a name as well, as someone who's won at a high level and has been well respected, you know, by his players. Those are two names that stand out to me. But Mike Brown, What he did in Sacramento was impressive. And what he did in Cleveland was impressive, too, with younger LeBron James and those squads. So those two guys stand out to me.
I agree with you. We'll see what happens, though, this offseason. DeMichael, I appreciate it, man. We'll catch up again soon.
All right, take care, guys.
Yes, sir. He is DeMichael Cole. He is the Grizzlies beat reporter for the Commercial Appeal. Also, go check out Locked On Grizz with him and Joe Molinax. Go to the Locked On Network and check out that podcast. Now, DeMichael has been brought to you by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store that's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. Make sure you get to their convenient location. If you drive Poplar every day, you pass it, stop passing it, and go in to the most unique retail experience in the city of Memphis. 964 June Road is where you can find them, right off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station. Best men's casual clothing in the business. They also have T-shirts for your favorite teams. They have all the SEC favorites, Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama, you name it. But they have Tigers, they have Grizzlies, everything you could possibly need if you're a sports fan resides at Oxbow at 964 June Road. But this is where it gets unique. New and used vintage vinyl for the music lovers. On the top floor, they have hunting and outdoor essentials for the adventurous souls. They have great stuff for waterfowl hunting. They have the best selection in the Mid-South when it comes to sports and entertainment memorabilia. Without question, you need to go over and take advantage. They have signed posters. They have trading cards, MLB card packs. Get in there and take advantage if you're into that. And then if you're going to go tailgating as we get closer to football season, they have cups, coolers, and koozies by Yeti that are in there for the taking. You can also go online instead of going to 964 June Road. If you like to do your shopping online, go to shopoxbow.com. That's shopoxbeau.com. And when you go to checkout, use my promo code, TheGabeShow, all caps, no spaces, TheGabeShow. You'll get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com. Whether you're going online or in-store, remember to shop local. Shop Oxbow. Now, small talk is next. Make sure that you stick around. Very important conversation. And small talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service 7 days a week. And they make it possible for Connor and I on a sports talk radio show to talk about the debate that's sweeping the nation right now. And the debate that's sweeping the nation on social media especially is one silverback gorilla versus 100 men fight to the death. Who wins? This does not preclude men from dying and trying to take down said silverback gorilla. But who wins ultimately, Connor? I think I have my answer, to be honest with you. Some people may disagree with me. Most people may disagree with me. I think I'm going to have to take 100 men because of quantity.
I think so, too.
I think I have to.
I agree.
As long as the men, if we throw in and preface it by saying they all will go after the gorilla and try to take it down. Now, I know that real life would be, even if it's Brock Lesnar going after the thing, if one person ahead of him dies, you're probably going to run. You know, human nature takes over. But who are you taking in this battle?
I'm taking
back and forth. And I do think this, too. We are a very smart, intelligent species. If we know ahead of time who the 100 men are going to be, and we form a plan of how to take down this silverback gorilla and do the background study. Gorillas don't have Google on human beings and their weak points. We have some Google. We can do some searches. We can figure out the best way to handle this as long as we have some time to prepare. So I think because of the intelligence, because of the quantity, you have to go the 100 men.
I think so too. I also think that the game plan is very, very important.
Yes.
Van Lathan sent out.
It's a great one, actually.
It's a great game
plan.
Very
great game plan.
He has five different waves with five different body types. He makes it very clear.
And he puts the asterisk, which I have to
give credit for. Some of you will die. Some of you will die. And that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Yes.
I think that we are losing at least 50%. At least,
yes,
in my opinion. That final 50, though, I think could get it done with maybe 10 to 15 more casualties. Probably.
So,
but I also think would it be important, can we surprise attack the gorilla? What are the rules of engagement here? Are we allowed to hide and pop out and surprise him, come from different directions? Does it have to be one gorilla in the middle and we're all surrounding him and then we charge all at once? I think that how we approach is very important.
Yes.
The thing that we have
and
to agree upon,
and we can do
though,
that. We're intelligent. 10, we can do this.
The first 10
are dying.
You're dead.
Yes.
You're dead. We've got to find people that understand their sacrifice, and they will live on in history. But if you're the first 10 or 20, you're dead. Heads are flying. Limbs are flying. He's going to use one of you, as a weapon.
So the tale of the tape with the gorilla is he's 6 foot. Maybe if he stands 6'5", 400 pounds, and he can move, push, or pull 2 tons, 4,000 pounds.
8 foot wingspan.
8 foot wingspan. That's the tale of the tape when it comes to the gorilla. Now, Van Lathan laid this out, and it's in waves. He has 5 waves. First wave would be meat sacks. He said it would be a bloody mess. These are the 300 pounders just to go up and start using brute force on the gorilla. And he said these are Vince Wilfork types. Don't want to see Vince Wilfork die, but again, you start with your first wave. They are, like we said, we're volunteering them as tribute.
Right.
Second wave, he has the runners, and he's talking about really fast guys who can just get on the ape as fast as possible, outmaneuver him.
I'm gonna be honest,
he says the Noah Lyles.
I think these guys are dead immediately.
Yes, I think they would be, but he said they can disorient it. Run in different ways.
Sure.
Disorient at the grill.
But if he gets his hands on one of them, he's ripping them in half.
The third wave, he wants to bring in the light brutes. So like some very fast boxers or wrestlers, whatever it is, where they can just start messing with this thing. And they're lighter, they can move, they can still disorient them. Fourth wave, the heavy brutes. Same idea as the fighters and the boxers, but they're heavier, they can pack more of a punch. Then the fifth wave, he says finishers, and this is vital striking, head, throat, neck, eyes. He put John Jones in this category.
I think that's smart.
I think this is why I think 100 men would do it, because we have the ability to think very critically about how we're going to take this thing down.
Right.
Whereas the gorilla does not have the same thing. He
Correct.
Just has 100 men running right after it. Just something to think about.
I think we could do it, but it would have to take some planning and just straight up people volunteering to
do it. Yes,
die.
Yes. Which we don't do.
We don't. I
did
would not
get a
be
kick
there.
Out of people
no
on,
way.
On online saying this is going to be Mr. Beast's next video.
Oh my God.
Oh, God. But glad we settled that debate. I know other people
Honestly,
have different opinions.
There's a lot of reasons.
We're on social, like, CDunning929.
We have AI, and I don't like a lot of the applications for it. This is one where somebody make the video.
Let's play it out.
I want to see what
I think
happens.
We've seen some people already try.
Have we?
It.
I haven't seen one yet.
Yeah, but it's AI. This leaves a lot to be desired still when you try to do things.
Like we need the real thing.
Yeah. Or not, Connor, or not. But third hour is on the way. We're going to go ahead and have that. And starting it off, we're going to bring on our guy, comes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, David Cobb from CBS Sports.